Well, there are a lot of ideas out there about how to deal with the volatility of North Korea. We've, of course, tried sanctions from the U.S., stinging, biting U.N. resolutions, military intimidation, of course. Even some South Korean activists sent thousands of leaflets across the border with $1 bills and anti-government rap songs into North Korea in hopes that they would get into the hands of North Korean citizens and convince them to fight against their own government. Lots of ideas. But for years, we've always assumed that the most effective deterrent against North Korea was directly to the West, in China. President Barack Obama called Chinese President Hu Jintao early this morning to urge him to work with the United States and send a clear message, so to speak, to North Korea. Joining us now is Brian Myers. He studies ideology and propaganda at Dongseo University in South Korea. Good morning again, Brian.
Good morning.
So explain to me these ideas of deterrence against North Korea. For a long period of time, diplomatic policy has been based on the idea that China has real influence in North Korea. Are we finding that to be untrue?
Yes, I do find that to be untrue. I think people who ask China to rein in Pyongyang do not understand the real nature of the Kim Jong-il regime. This is not a late Cold War state. It's a paranoid, ultra-nationalist, ultra-racialist state which mistrusts all foreigners, whether they're friendly or adversarial. And if you look back at the Korean War, when the North Koreans relied on China for their very survival, even then they refused to take orders from the Chinese. So I don't see that's likely to change now. I think the only way that Beijing can bring about change in North Korea is by turning off the aid spigot entirely and allowing it to collapse. But let's remember, that's something that even South Korea does not particularly want to see happen.
Well, you know, thinking about South Korea's predicament here, Brian Myers, they announced that the Air Force would answer another attack within the last 48 hours. And they've also said that they might use their artillery against the North in some sense. You know, given North Korea's penchant for making propaganda about anything related to the tension between the North and the South, would the presence of civilian North Korean casualties at the hand of South Korean weapons provide a huge propaganda victory for Pyongyang and escalate this forward?
Well, yeah, I think the problem is that the Kim Jong-il regime, and this is very different from the Kim Il-sung regime, which preceded it, derives all of its legitimacy, all of its support from pride in the republic's military strength. And it follows from this that the regime cannot suffer even a limited defeat on the international stage or in a war and still hold on to support at home. So if the South were, say, to retaliate in a strong fashion and create so many North Korean civilian deaths that the North Korean regime would have to acknowledge them, then I think an escalation would be inevitable.
And it sounds like South Korea, to a certain extent, agrees with you. They started live fire exercises off South Korea's east, west, and south coasts just this morning. We understand that there are reports that it's not close to the island where North Korea fired artillery. How close is it to the disputed area?
Well, you know, the South Koreans have told shipping to avoid 29 areas, and one of those areas is about it's very close to the island of Taechung, which is in itself close to the island of Yeonpyeongdo. And that island is also in waters that are claimed by North Korea. So I think the North Koreans will have a very different definition of what constitutes close. It's very close the way they look at it.
Well, are these exercises, including the joint military exercises the U.S. and South Korea held, are these the kind of things that would lead to intimidate North Korea militarily?
I don't think they intimidate North Korea very much. Let's remember, they've criticized all the exercises that the South Korean military has conducted, regardless of how close they are to North Korean waters or territory. This has been going on for like 40 years now. The North has always said these are rehearsals for nuclear war. But it's important to distinguish between North Korea's external-oriented propaganda and what it tells its own people. It tells its own people that the United States and South Korea are paper tigers. It said, I was just watching the North Korean TV news last night on Sunday night, and it said, we in North Korea, we are keeping our cool and exercising restraint.
Wow.
So I get the impression that they're saying something a little bit less inflammatory to their own people this time.
But that, you know, for 40 years we've been doing this dance here. You've got in South Korea these symbolic live fire exercises. It seems to me there's all this sort of saber-rattling, but yet from the South Korean perspective, this is not a target-rich environment. A small symbolic attack would be a propaganda victory that says basically they are paper tigers, but something significant on the order of civilian casualties would force the North to move across the DMZ.
Well, that's just it. This is really the quandary that South Korea is in. I believe that as a military-first regime, North Korea really has no choice except to keep flexing its muscles. It's really the only thing it has with which to inspire its people. So I believe that North Korea is going to continue to cause problems regardless of what South Korea does. So I think it's probably just as good a thing for them to flex their muscles in return and to show North Korea that if they do want to attack, they better be ready for an all-out conflict. And I don't think that the North Koreans want that.
Well, you know, Brian Myers, it sounds as though it's kind of the devil's dilemma here, that the two options that you've laid out as being effective of all, number one, cutting off aid so that the Kim Jong-il government would topple, and number two, some kind of military exercise in which civilians were killed, both of those end up affecting and hurting the North Korean civilians before they hurt the government.
Well, that's something, you know, that needs to be taken into account. But I think the situation is one that China needs to realize. There really are no peaceful solutions when you have a military-first government which can only inspire pride by engaging in destabilizing acts of provocation against the rival state. And sooner or later, North Korea is bound to push things too far. And I think this is what the United States is trying to make clear to the Chinese.
Well, is it the Chinese have yet to act? Is that because they won't or they can't?
Well, China really does not have as much leeway or as much of a say with the North Koreans as we tend to think. The North Koreans have never looked up to the Chinese very much. There's been a very cynical relationship that they've had with Beijing for decades now. But again, if you think about the uranium facilities that were disclosed a couple weeks ago, we have to take it for granted that a certain amount of the materials needed to make those facilities came into the country from China. And I think the very least the Chinese can do is to start working with UN sanctions and trying to make sure that North Korea is not enabled to cause even greater problems in the future.
Brian Myers, he studies North Korean ideology and propaganda at Dongseo University. Thanks for joining us again, Brian.
Sure thing.
On Notes from America, we have conversations with people across the country about how we can truly become the nation that we claim to be. Each week, we talk about race, our politics, education, relationships, usually all of them, because everything's connected. And you, our listeners, are at the center of those conversations. I'm Kai Wright. Join me on Notes from America, wherever you get your podcasts.